Good morning, Jacques Julius Schouten.
Manuel Ramos, I'm Sekgo Fatso from the Legal Services Department of Communication. Just please, Chairperson, just to apologize. We, the Deputy Minister, the DG, and other colleagues, that are just here in the sun. Thank you, Commissioner.
Good morning, Member. My name is Mongameli Kweta, a State Law Advisor from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Thank you.
To the members in the House at large. The name is Kumele Lengema, Parliamentary Legal Advice. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Isla Power standing for Dalish Peace. Thank you.
Morning, everyone. My name is Eric Poskati. I'm the Colleague Advisor for the Commission.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Amanda Sinjan. I'm the committee assistant.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Cindy Swa, and I'm an intern in committee.
Good morning. My name is Ryan from an NGO Course for Justice.
Good morning, my name is Jibril Sana. I'm also from the NGO Course for Justice.
Good morning, I'm Lungu Sojolinsi, Secretary, Eastern Cape, thank you.
Morning, Kanya Kabaka, representative of the PMG.
Good morning, Philip Rosenthal from Association of Christian Media.
Chairperson, I think the starting point so that it would be easy to take the numbers through the process is to indicate that this is the Section 75 bill. The Freedoms and Publications Amendment Bill has been tagged by the joint tagging mechanism as the Section 75 bill. And what it means that it is a Section 75, it means basically that we are not following the process that is stipulated in terms of Section 76 of the Constitution, but we follow the process that is in terms of Section 75. And what it means for a bill to be a Section 75 bill is mainly on the process that it follows when it is undergoing its legislative process through Parliament. The first and main point is that for a Section 75 bill, there is no process of mandate. The Constitution and the rules of Parliament do not make room for that. Hence, that is where the main distinction is. So a Section 75 bill, in terms of the rules of Parliament and in terms of the Constitution, it actually depends on how each committee determines its own process as to how it should go about dealing with all the constitutional obligations in terms of the Constitution. The main obligation is to facilitate public involvement, which means the public needs to be given a meaningful time and meaningful engagement to try and influence the decision of the decision makers, that being the committee. In this instance, this bill has been referred by the main house, the National Council of Provinces, to each committee, which is the Select Committee. And the Select Committee, in terms of the program and the advertisement that we have seen, it has, in a way, determined how it is going to process this bill. That being the case, despite it being a Section 75, I am following that the committee has decided to engage in extensive public hearing. But before it got to that stage, there was an advert that went out to call for written submission or either an indication if you want to do an oral submission. And that has been done as far as I could gather information, Chairperson. It was an advert that required anybody who needed to bring something forward before 12 o'clock midday on the 3rd of August 2018. That I gathered from the information from the committee secretary and the advert itself, which she sent out when she called for the public submission. At the stage where we are today, it is the 15th of August 2018, where the committee is supposed to get a briefing from the department. And what is entailed on the briefing is just an information session where the department takes the committee through the processes that the bill has gone through and where we are at today. And what we must appreciate is that the first house, the National Assembly, at this stage where we are at now, has gone through its own process. Public facilitation and public engagement was conducted by the Portfolio Committee, and then on the 6th of March 2018, the Portfolio Committee, before the National Assembly, made their submission. And the National Assembly, through the process called the second reading on the bill, they made a decision to pass the bill in line with whatever the Portfolio Committee had done. And all the amendments and changes that the Portfolio Committee had done on the bill that was introduced by the executive. So the bill that is before the Select Committee today is the bill that has been passed by the Portfolio Committee and the National Assembly after its own engagement on the bill. And therefore, we need to be dealing with a bill that is called B37B of 2015. We are no longer looking at B37 without the alphabet B, because that bill is an introduced bill as it was presented by the minister when they tabled the bill for Parliament to take it through its legislative process. So I would urge and request that members, whatever we do in the public itself and any information or submission, it must be done on B37B 2015, not any other bill. And Chairperson, further to that, as I've already said, that there is a distinction between 75 and 76. And unfortunately for 75 bills, it is dependent upon each committee and each House of Parliament to dictate an indicator to how it will go about. And like I've said, in this instance, the committee has taken a decision that it will call for public hearing. It has already taken a written submission, and the date and the time frame that was set for submissions is already gone past, as it was the 3rd of August 2018. In light of the question that was added, Chairperson, just to speak to it as well, as the Chairperson has indicated, I will not be in a position to provide any decision or position, but it is a matter that the committee will have to deliberate on and make a committee decision. But perhaps I should just say that as far as I'm concerned and I'm aware, the committee secretary, in the engagements that were taking place between the people that may have interest in the extension of time, I noted, first of all, that the request was done way after the 3rd of August 2018, which is the time that was set for any submission to come through. I further noted that in her engagement, she actually did provide, valid or not valid, I wouldn't offer any position to that, an extension, if I may call it that, until the 17th of August 2018 to the people that had engaged with her. On the basis and on the thinking that she indicated that because public hearings would begin on the 22nd of August 2018, perhaps she may still take in and will take forward whatever submissions that come through so that the committee would be able to consider them and deliberate on them. And since then, as I understand and from messages and communication that she's been providing to me, there has been some submissions that have been coming through, despite that the time frame that is set in terms of the advent has already lapsed since we are gone far past 3 August 2018. So from where we are today, it is a briefing that the committee must take, and once the briefing from the department has taken place, it is the committee that will take a decision and direct us how we go about in order for the committee to continue with its legislative processing of the Feelings Public and of the Feelings and Publications Amendment Bill, B37B of 2015. Unless I've left out anything, Chairperson, I am at your service, and that is, I think, the most I could explain in terms of the process and where we are at today. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and let me also recognize Honorable Members who are here in the House, Chair Honorable Nyambi, and all Honorable Members. And Honorable Chair, I'm with the DG as well as Councillor Westmark of the Film and Publication Board. I'm also with the official, the COO of the FPB, as well as the legal team from both the FPB and the Department of Communication. Chair, allow me to also present the apology of the Minister, Minister Mukonyane. She was here yesterday on other work-related issues, and she's also required to be in Gauteng on other work-related issues as the Minister. Chair, I'm pleased to appear before this Orders Committee to seek the guidance, input and subsequent approval of the National Council of Provinces in relation to critical and fundamental objectives of the democratic state. And members, I appear before you with some semblance of joy that the very act we are on the verge of accomplishing is a principle which former President Mandela really lived by and sought to achieve. Is there a better way to celebrate his legacy and centenary year other than to bring his words into fruition? This is one of the things we should ask ourselves. The bill will seek your guidance, Chair, and approval on today is best articulated in words of our liberation stalwarts and world-renowned icon. It seeks to act against those who tear the fabric of our society by abusing our children. In the words of former President Mandela, and I quote, "Our children are our greatest treasure. They are our future. Those who abuse them tear at the fabric of our society and weaken our nation," close quote. And he further says, I quote, "There can be no keener revelation of a society's soul than the way in which it treats its children." In essence, honorable members, what we seek to achieve through this bill speaks directly to the fabric of our society and its soul. Before I delve into the objectives of the Act, it is very important that I explain what the Act is not concerned with. The Act is not concerned with censorship of society in any way. As most members of this House would recall, the apartheid regime curtailed every aspect of our freedoms. This included what we could say, what we could watch, the types of photos one could take and view, the type of music one could listen to, and even the very words we uttered were subject to warranted scrutiny. The right to express ourselves in any form was frowned upon by the state. And so, Honorable Chair, upon the creation of a democratic state, in 1996, we created an institution that would give you information and empower citizens instead of depriving of one's right to information in what any form citizens consume it. We repealed legislations like the Indecent or Obscene Photographic Matter Act 37 of 1967, and the Publications Act 42 of 1974. And these were the very acts which made it impossible to see a picture of Nelson Mandela. We created a new comprehensive regulatory framework for films and publications. And the legislative framework we created in 1996 established an organization, namely the Film and Publication Board, which would be responsible for the classification of films and publications. And as such, this bill's primary concern is to protect our children from harmful content such as child pornography and to prohibit its distribution and publication on any platform. Empowered by the Constitutional Court judgment of the Rook, the bill strengthens our provisions against the possession and distribution of child photographs. Honorable Chair and members, I cannot emphasize this point tonight. The bill does not concern itself with what citizens may publish on social media. However, it empowers the SPD to facilitate the removal of child pornography wherever it is published. I pause here to further emphasize that from its conception, the SPD was not meant to ban any films or publications, but furnish members of society with information about the nature and substance of the content they are about to consume. With the advent of the fourth industrial revolution, the manner in which we consume films or publications has drastically changed. Content is not viewed only via cinema or DVD anymore. It is now viewed on digital platforms via online streaming facilities, etc. And this has created a gap in the regulatory framework. Citizens, especially children, can now access content which has not been classified and labeled. And furthermore, we have seen that games which our citizens, children in particular, consume need to be appropriately classified. Although the bill criminalizes the possession of child pornography, it is not done out of its own accord. The criminalization arises as a result of the primary legislation insofar as sexual crimes are concerned, mainly the Sexual Offence Act. It therefore became necessary to align the definition of child pornography with the Sexual Offence Act. And in that same vein, the regulation of digital platforms is the domain of the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act. Inter alia, the bill has to align itself to the provision of the respect. And as mentioned earlier, the bill tries to deal with some regulatory gaps. Chief among those are the lack of effective enforcement of the provision of the Act that is non-compliant with the data, and the lack of coordination and collaboration among organs of state and industry players to ensure that we collectively protect the fabric of our society. And Honorable Chair, I think it is also important for me to say that this bill comes before you at a very crucial time in our society. It comes at a time where we celebrate a great woman of fortitude, Mom Albertina Sisulu, and the contribution of the struggle of liberation by women. In the month where we collectively reflect on the legacy of great generation of women who say, if you strike a woman, you strike a rock. There's a general consensus that women are being struck left, right, and center. And the safety and dignity of women is a primary concern of women abuse and domestic violence, patriarchy, and misogyny need to be approached. What we have found is that this conduct is not confined only to physical spaces. It also plays itself out in the virtual online space. Where children are concerned, it takes the form of cyberbullying, and in relationships, it manifests itself in the form of revenge pornography. As the voice of our people, we need to lend a hand and legislate laws that can protect our women and children involved in the physical realm and online. I can think of no better moment than now for us to collectively answer the call to protect the children. Honorable Chair, let me conclude by thanking you for receiving this bill in the manner that you have done. And most importantly, I'm aware that the NCOP public consultation process concluded on the 3rd of August 2019. Thank you. And now allow me to hand over Honorable Chair to the Acting Director General of the Department, Mr. Dr. Buluka.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair and members of this August House. Since this is my maiden appearance to this August House, allow me to really express my sincere gratitude for the invitation and that commit our support that in the execution of our mandate, we're looking forward to working this meeting and without any doubt for the support and guidance of this August House. What I'm going to do, Chair, is to give you a broad context of this bill and then I'll allow colleagues to take it from that. And I'm going to be very, very simple. As you're aware, this bill, I mean, the act that's currently
just on a point of order. My apologies, DG. I think we are jumping the gun now because we also have another process that we just need to go through first before you came in, before we go into the actual bill itself. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. For starters, I note the legal opinion, but I also feel that as a legal opinion, it should also indicate to us, because you said that you will not be able to say whether it is valid or not. So we need an opinion at least, then we will decide. You know, we need a legal opinion and then we will decide, because we need that. You know, opinion whether you say it's valid or not valid, you know, the request from members of the public. I noted that you said the public hearings will only commence on the 22nd of August. It is a week from now. Should it be granted, I think, by at least 29 August. And you know, since it's a Section 75 bill, I don't see the haste in that. You know, I think as members of parliament, we should also always be mindful that it's our responsibility to enact laws, but be mindful of the fact that we are making laws on behalf and for people. And we should by far extend our hand, you know, in terms of that. And I just want to know, You didn't go into the proper reasons for this request and what's your opinion on it. I know the chairperson asked you to go into deeper details in terms of the newspapers and so forth, or the adverts in the newspapers. So just is in your opinion, is it valid and reasonable? And can you also touch on an aspect that they also mentioned in terms of they say in the submission that consultation with the public in this instance require much higher standards. I think that was a judgment that the court judgment on health, that it requires much higher standards. Do you think, in your opinion, we had the highest standard? What standard in your legal opinion that we must uphold? And then I also, in your reply to the chairperson, whether the newspapers, articles, or what went out, did you also, because we had previously had opinion, mix it with that also with the advert. Was it only in English? Because the chairperson said it was in a lot of, in all 11 languages. Can you give us an opinion so that we give clarity to the person that made the submission today? And your opinion on circulation when it comes to invitations for public participation. What do you think, or chairperson, I wouldn't, it would be unfair to get a legal opinion on this, but my submission would be that we need to, from time to time, check our strategies to get people to comment on certain bills, because I think newspapers only is not the proper medium to use, because you can use the internet, you can use all others. Did we use that? Because young people nowadays, you know, not all people read newspapers. And is it really circulating to the ears and the eyes that we want in society? Because, you know, we're making laws, and I'm emphasizing, we're making laws on behalf and for people. Are we reaching them? And then also there was a complaint that on the PMG website, it didn't appear on the PMG website, and did it appear on the parliamentary website? Because that's where most people, you know, normally our informed people in society on certain issues, you know, our stakeholders will get information on what's happening in Parliament, or what transpired in Parliament, or what will happen in Parliament, and it's through these websites. Did we place it on that so that we can get a comprehensive view and answer, give an answer to the submission? Thank you, Chair.
Now, greetings to everybody. Thanks, Chair. It's a procedural issue. You'll rule if I'm not in order. My take of what we're trying to do now, we are having our own in-house issues as a committee. We've got a department that is supposed to do the presentation. Of course, we have acknowledged and accepted the apology that the DM and the DG were late. And when you gave the DM an opportunity to do the opening remarks, I thought we were dealing with a bit. So what we're trying to do now, dealing with the legal part, it's like having a department and trying to correct our own or adopt our own meaning. So let's separate the issues, because the issues being raised by Honorable Julius are very important, but I don't think they are linked to what is going to be presented. If you want to entertain the presentation, do clarity singing questions, let's deal with that process. And then how we want to conduct our business as a select committee of the NCOP is a separate matter. Like, when we get to that, I would love to even explain some of the things that the main house has dealt with it. It's an in-house thing. We can deal with it outside what will be presented by the department, and we can entertain the department, and then, of course, not all the questions that were raised by Honorable Ministers, because they are very important, but it's not something that we can have the department sitting dealing how we want to do our business. In terms of separation of power, they are here to do their own business. Let's entertain them. Let us not crisscross the issues.
Before they are not being
Magnificent. Just I support your suggestion. To answer Honorable Nyambi, I feel I have to say this because I don't think that this committee and the department, and excuse my son, the DM, but we are not more important than the people. The people have the query, so we need to address that first. We can wait. We have the whole day to do it. But the people always must come first in our approach. So I suggest that we take our time to hear the legal opinion because there was an urgent question.
Thank you.
I thought what Honorable Nyambi was saying is we give the department and then we deal with our own issue after the department is finished. I thought that's the way forward.
Okay, can we allow that just to answer this and then we can take a decision? Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members, for the question. I will try to be brief, even though the information does not connect, but with everything that has been said, I'm sure with the little bit that I will provide in being brief, we will direct the committee and will assist everybody in the house. Chairperson, in order to be brief, I will try to contain myself to the questions rather than bringing the whole and then the baby to the house. And Chairperson, to start with your question, in light of checking the specific judgment that was referred to when the request for the extension was made, that is the judgment that was for last, it was decided in 2006, and since then there's been other judgments that speak to the issue that arise out of Section 56 and Section 72 of the Constitution. I think the first point to note and to make it clear for everybody in the House is that Parliament is made of two houses. And those two houses is the National Assembly and the National Council of Provinces. They stand apart. There is no main or smaller or whatever adjective you want to add to that. The National Council of Provinces and the National Assembly, they are together making Parliament. Without the other, there would be no Parliament. So there is no main or subsidiary or whatever house. They stand on equal footing. In terms of the Doctors for Life judgment, the judgment was speaking to bills that were before Parliament. At the time the matter was taken to court, Parliament was still undergoing its legislative processes on those specific bills at the time. And later on, they had to be assented to by the President after the legislative process of Parliament was done. So there were a number of issues that arose out of the judgment, but I will try to contain ourselves to the specific one today, which is public participation. And public participation in terms of our Constitution, because we know today that we have a supreme law of the country, which is the Constitution, and the specific provisions that speak specifically to this House, because the Select Committee is the committee of the National Council of Provinces. It is Section 72 of the Constitution. And Section 72 of the Constitution is actually a mirror of what is expected of the National Assembly in terms of Section 56. It requires and makes an obligation upon the National Council of Provinces and its committees to conduct and facilitate public involvement. So there is an issue or there should be clarity and a distinction between public participation and political participation. And that arises out of the judgment of the scholar. Political participation may involve a lot, including the right to vote and how you engage yourself as an individual and as a citizen of the country in public affairs. What we are doing here today as a legislative body of the whole country, it is actually a public affair, because we are trying to put law into, we are involved in a lawmaking process, hence Section 72, which requires that this committee must facilitate public involvement. And what does it mean to facilitate public involvement? As I have said, this national legislation that directs how the provinces will link up together with the national council in order to ensure that the interests of the provinces and the interests of local government is taken into account when the national legislature is making the law. So in terms of Section 65, and in line with what is required by Section 75 of the Constitution, and in terms of the internal processes and parliamentary rules, Doctors for Life said Parliament has a discretion to decide how it goes about when it facilitates public involvement. But what is important is that because this is a constitutional obligation, there is no way that Parliament may not do that process. But Parliament is still vested with the discretion as to how it goes about in ensuring that public participation was facilitated. Now, going out of the legalities and attempting our Chairperson, without the caveat that I must give, in order to ensure that we deal with the issue where there are accusations that we mislead Parliament, I would have loved to go through verbatim what the court has said, especially in the Doctors for Life. But that can be done later, as this is indicated, when Parliament deals with all its processes and when I attempt to advise the committee in line with what the Constitutional Court has said in this regard. But be that as it may, let me try and speak to the questions in order to allow the committee to move forward. In terms of the time frames of the advert as well as the platforms where the advert was placed, I think we need to appreciate the distinction between the structures of Parliament. That Chairperson is not within the ambit of me as a legal advisor. It is the processes of the committee section. And having had a discussion with you in the afternoon yesterday, I attempted to get the information, but I also was hoping that the committee secretary that engaged in this process would be before the committee so that all these things can turn out in the committee and can be given effect and proper evidence be given in that light. But unfortunately, I didn't get the answers from her as well in order for me to be able to give an answer to that. But I also am hoping maybe those that are standing in for here today might have the information. But if not, that is also not a transmission. We can provide the same when the extended time where we are going to be deliberating on this and providing the information to the committee will be done. So those questions that relate to the advert and whether 11 languages were done and where it was, it is not my ambit. And I'm not in a position to be able to provide any information in respect of this. Because even through my attempt, I couldn't get any information. And because this is the process of Parliament, which has to be legal in all sense, I cannot then make an opinion or a validation or whatever in that regard.
Thank you very much.
And then, Chairperson, in terms of the question that was also asked whether I must provide my opinion on the validity, I think there was a misunderstanding. The validity thereof I was speaking of is the action of the committee secretary, not the decision to extend the time frame for submission. That needs to be clear, Chairperson. I was speaking to the issue that already as we speak, in terms of what the facts that have transpired, there is tentatively an extension in place. And whether it is valid or not, because of where it stems from, that was the point I was speaking to. Not the point whether the extension as a decision by the committee would be valid or not. I think that clarity is necessary and crucial, Chairperson. And then, on the legal opinion whether the committee can or cannot make an extension, as the Doctors for Life has indicated, those are discretions that lie within the committee and the structure of Parliament. And whatever Parliament does, it is a creature of statute, which means we cannot go out of the Constitution, we cannot go out of the ambit of the rules of Parliament, we cannot go out of the ambit of whatever legislation that is in place and do whatever we are thinking is best and we want. Every legal act that Parliament does has to be legally done
and hence it must be a power and an obligation that is supported elsewhere in an instrument that is a valid legal instrument for this country. And I also cannot venture into the high standards or whatever opinion level in terms of whether public participation is of high standard or low standard. That is not my place. I'm not qualified for that. All I do is to advise the committee, this is the law, and this is how we are seeing the interpretation of the law panning out, and this is how we should go about it. Like I said, Chairperson, on all those questions, I think it would be safe and fair to deal with them once the process and the intention of this day, specifically as you have indicated, and perhaps the briefing by the department will also open up all of us, our minds, to see what we are dealing with and then bring in the process. And hence, Chairperson, like I said, I would, if I were to venture an opinion or a suggestion, to say perhaps let us allow the department to finalize the briefing and then we come back to these issues, because I am a support staff for Parliament. I am employed to do this. So we can then sit here, and this is an open public meeting. Whatever will be said and whatever will be deliberated on, any person who still wants to be here will be here, and we will deal with that, and we will assist the committee as much as we can to ensure that whatever process is taken through, it is procedurally correct and it is within the laws of the country as they appear. Thank you, Chairperson. I'll drop off.
Thank you. Adiji, I'm going to give over to you. Sorry for this. I just want to make everyone not experience on the process. We are going to deal with our in-house afterwards, but it was just to lay the foundation so everybody can understand and go away with this view that we jump the gun. Maybe we are putting the horses before the car. This will be consolation. Over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. As I was saying, before we get to the economy of the bill, I thought I should provide context to the House to this amendment, that the act that we are amending today was formulated, or it was enacted in 1996. So you can imagine it's almost 22 years since. And if you look at the environment that we are in, it has changed a lot, as evidenced by the following. One, the rapidly changing technological environment and the proliferation of social media platforms, which were not there at that time. And then the other issue that is quite critical is there's been changes in the legislative environment, such as your sexual offences and related acts of 2007, which means I think our definition has to be aligned to those kind of legislation. And the other issue of major importance is the fact that we are a constitutional democracy where the supreme law of the country, the constitution. And we had some of the provisions of the existing act declared unconstitutional by the constitutional court. So we needed to really reflect on those and see how we align to that, because any section of our law that is considered to be out of tune with the constitution cannot be implemented in this country. And also the proliferation of children pornography, especially on various media platforms. And on the other hand, noting that at the moment, the Film Publication Board, which is the entity that is responsible for that area, doesn't have certain powers to deal with some of this changing environment. So that's why we thought this bill is very important to kind of deal with those matters. There was no Facebook. Empowering the Film and Publication Board to deal with this changing environment is very key, because otherwise it would be not effective in its execution the mandate. That's why we are presenting these amendments to you so that as the August House you can consider. And some of the issues that you are presenting you are actually aware of. And at this point, allow me to hand over to the Chief Operations Officer of Premium Publication Board, Ms. Abongile Mashele, to take us through the conversation. Thank you, Dean Chief.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Abongile Mashele. I'm going to take you through our presentation and giving you a brief history on the Women Publications Act, what was the intention of the legislation. I'll give you some background on the bill, the current amendment that we have. We'll also look at the purpose of the amendments, what do we seek to achieve by the amendments, the history of the bill, what process have we gone so far to get to where we are, the stakeholders that we've consulted. My colleague will also take us through the actual provisions, the amendments that we want to go through, as well as the expected impact and the way forward on the bill. In terms of the Film and Publications Act, the Act is the main objective of the legislation is to regulate the creation, possession, production, and distribution of films, games, and certain publications, with the intention of protecting children from disturbing and harmful content and to provide information to adults and to enable them to make informed viewing and gaming choices. The Act is the primary source of legislation regarding the classification of films, games, and publications in South Africa. The operation of the Act is known primarily through what we see when we go to the cinema and when we buy DVDs, when you get a triangle that says this movie cannot be consumed by children under a particular age. The Act, as it currently stands, establishes the Film and Publications Board as an institution that is supposed to oversee and ensure that the objects of the Act are attained. And the Act is headed by the Chief Executive Office, the Board. All films and games have to be classified before distribution in South Africa, and distributors of such films and games must be registered with the board. Publications, on the other hand, are dealt with separately. These, we are only required to classify and deal with them if there is a public complaint lodged by a member of the public. The Act further creates criminal offenses in terms of child pornography and grooming type offenses. So over and above what is contained in the Constitution, when it comes to the limitation of freedom of expression, the Act also provides for child pornography to be prohibited from distribution in the South African context. The ethos underpinning the Act was to shift away from the notion of a censorship board to a classification authority, providing South Africans with the information required to make a choice about what they want to watch or play. The objects of the Act are broadened to criminalize explicitly the possession, production, and distribution of child pornography and to create offenses for the non-compliance with the classification of the board. The current Act was written for and implemented in a world of cinemas, video stores, and adult premises. The internet and the ongoing communications revolution mean that we now consume content in completely different ways. And the model of internet content distributors differs completely from the cinema and DVD stores. One of the most important aspects of this bill is the attempt to establish a legislative basis for the regulation by the board of content in the digital form distributed through electronic media. The main objective thus far is to regulate the creation, possession, and distribution of films, games, and certain publications. The Act further makes the use of children and the exposure to child pornography punishable. I think I've already said this. I'm going to jump to slide 8. Now, when we were reviewing the legislation as the Film and Publication Board, there were a couple of things that we looked at. We commissioned research that highlighted that there was a gap in terms of the current provisions that we have in the legislation because it was specific to particular platforms and therefore we were unable to meet the objects of the Act if you are talking to distributors that are largely cinema and DVD distributors. So the research you commissioned highlighted that gap and it said we must issue amendments. We also had an appeals tribunal against the Film and Publications Act in the classification of the sphere, which highlighted some gaps in our legislation that we needed to look into. In September 2012, the Constitutional Court, in the matter between PMSA versus the Minister of Home Affairs and another, declared Section 16(2) of the Act unconstitutional. The sections required publishers, with the exception of registered newspapers, to submit intended publications containing sexual conduct, and that was proven to that violates or shows disrespect for the right to human dignity, degrades the person or constitutes incitement to cause harm to the board prior to approval. The Constitutional Court ruled that that particular section was unconstitutional. The court held that prior classification system limited the right to freedom of expression as contained in Section 16 of the Constitution and was not justifiable. Another reason for the review of the legislation is that in 2013, the Appeals Tribunal found that the regulations of the Act when it comes to the processing and handling of child pornography was not aligned to the constitutional ruling of the Rook versus the DPP in 2004, which gave a clear definition and the context within which we are supposed to define child pornography. Last but not least, in recent years, we've also seen that there has been a proliferation of posting and uploading private sex videos and videos depicting violence on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube without necessarily requiring the consent of the victims on those videos or the people who are depicted on the video. Consent, prior consent is not sought before the material is uploaded on social media. So the bill in its current guise seeks to provide recourse for members of the public when it comes to those issues. What does the bill seek to do? In terms of the initial amendment bill we submitted in 2015, the bill sought to align the definition of child pornography to the definition as provided for in the Constitutional Court judgment. The bill also sought to give effect to the constitutional amendments as required by the court in the case between print media versus the Minister of Home Affairs. The bill also sought to decriminalize the online distribution of adult content on all platforms, including digital platforms. In its current guise, adult content distribution is only limited to physical stores and not online stores. It also sought to provide for the establishment of a co-regulation system that will allow for accreditation by the board of independent classification bodies to classify their own digital films, games, and publications. This is largely an understanding that the industry has changed. Industry can do their own classification under our own rules. And lastly, it's to provide for an effective penalty regime in support of the co-regulation approach. The bill also seeks to align with international best practice on matters relating to the regulation of distribution of online content. It seeks to strengthen efforts to combat online distribution of illegal content as it is currently defined in our legislation. The bill seeks to establish a co-regulation regime for classification of digital content. It seeks to amplify responsibilities of internet service providers in matters regarding protection of children against sexual content. It seeks to address the shortcomings in relation to regulation, compliance monitoring, and usage of new media and social networking platforms. And it also seeks to align definitions to various judgments of the Constitutional Court and the Tribunal. It establishes a penalty committee to address public complaints and administrative offences committed by distributors and industry. That penalty committee has since changed to an enforcement committee in the current guise of the legislation. The bill also provides for the accreditation of foreign classification systems for online content, acknowledging the global nature of content distribution on digital platforms. On the 23rd of October 2015, there was a notice to introduce the bill to Parliament issued by the Minister of Communications. And the bill was introduced on during November 2015. The notice stated that the intention of the bill was to insert and amend certain definitions, provide for the establishment of and the composition and appointment of members of the penalty committee, and to provide for the powers and duties of the penalty committee. It also sought to regulate online distribution of digital and forms and games, and lastly, to extend the functions of the FPB of monitoring compliance with the Forum and Publications Act to include distributors in respect to the requirements to the Forum and Publications Act. The notice further stated that the intention of the bill was to revise and further regulate the functions of compliance officers regarding entering and inspection of premises and facilities in which businesses of sale, hiring, and exhibition of forms and games is being conducted, to regulate the classification of forms, games, and publications, to provide for independent industry classification bodies accreditation by the FPB, to provide for classification of publications, forms, and games by industry bodies, to provide for classification systems and approval thereof by the FPB, and also to provide for the classification of ratings issued by foreign classification bodies. It also sought to provide for the right of appeal against classifications issued by the independent industry classification body, to provide for exemptions in respect to online distribution of forms and games, and as well as to provide for the obligations of ISPs regarding the use of their services in advocating racism and hate speech, to revise and strengthen the penal provisions as they are provided for in the current legislation, and to provide for matters connected therewith. This is just a brief history of the process that we have gone so far since that initial notice was made in November. On going to the third bullet point, on the 23rd of February 2016, the Department of Communications briefed the Portfolio Committee on Communications on the bill. An advert calling for submissions on the bill was published, and the deadline for submission was 29 April 2016. On 19 April 2016, following a number of requests pointing out the inadequacy of the consultation period, there was an extension granted by the Portfolio Committee to the 26th of May 2016. In August 2016, hearings on the Forms and Publications Amendment Bill were held by the Portfolio Committee, and these were held between 30th of August and 31 August, where the proposed amendments were considered. On the 20th of September, the Department of Communication provided responses to the public inputs and the submissions made by the stakeholders. On the 7th of March 2017, the Portfolio Committee conducted further deliberations on the Form and Publications Bill, Amendment Bill, and they provided feedback to the board. And the key issues that they requested the department to go back and do was to look at the final tariff structure related to the bill, to conduct a socio-economic impact assessment on the bill, and to have an extensive clause-by-clause amendment list that would be provided to the Portfolio Committee. On the 16th of May 2017, there was a briefing by the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation on the compliance of the Forms and Publications Amendment Bill with a socio-economic impact assessment and DOC, where we provided a detailed socio-economic impact assessment on the provisions of the bill. On the 23rd of May 2017, an interim report of the Portfolio Committee on Communications on the Forms and Publications Bill was provided. The report requested an inquiry into the subject of the bill and conducting the public hearings and deliberations the committee realized that it was necessary to amend other provisions of the Principal Act which were not included in the bill. The committee amended other provisions in the Act beyond the scope of the initial bill that was provided by the minister. The amendments that were deliberated upon and were included in the current version of the bill were largely in the definition, but also they looked at Section 4A and 31A of the bill. The committee also amended other provisions of the Principal Act and requested the permission of the National Assembly in order to report and include these additional amendments because they were over and above what the minister had requested. And this was in line with the National Assembly Rule number 286, which stipulates that when a committee deals with a bill and amends provisions of the legislation and the committee intends to propose additional amendments, the committee must seek permission of the Assembly to do so. In 14 November 2017, the Portfolio Committee voted to adopt the bill and for it to proceed to the National Assembly. The Portfolio Committee finalized the bill to be processed to the National Assembly on the 21st of November 2017. 22 December 2017, the bill was tabled. The bill set to proceed to the National Assembly lapsed in terms of Rule 333. As the bill had lapsed on the 27th of February, it was revised through a motion in a sitting on 27th February to go before the National Assembly for debate on the 6th of March. On the 6th of March, the debate was held, and on the 6th of March, the bill passed through the National Assembly, and it was transmitted to the National Council of Provinces for concurrence. In terms of the public consultations that were received, a total of 32 written submissions were received from various civil society organizations, broadcasters, state law enforcement agencies, religious bodies, professional bodies, and private companies in the telecommunications sector. On the 30th of August, the organizations that are listed in slide 19 provided oral representations on the amendment bill. On the 31st of August, 10 more organizations, as outlined in slide 20, further made amendments to the bill. After the amendments or the proposals had been made by the various organizations, as the department is the entity, we went and we looked at together with the parliamentary team, looked at what the public inputs were and whether the amendments could be, what amendments would be made to respond to the public input. I'm going to request my colleague, Sakofaso, to take us through the actual clauses that were changed from the initial bill that was submitted to the National Assembly. Thank you.
Good morning, again, colleagues. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you, Honorable Members. Thank you, DM and DG. I'll proceed from slide number 21, which deals basically on the left-hand side is the original bill, as and when it was presented in the Parliament, while on the right-hand side, it's a bill that is before the members. The bill that my colleague, Ms. Ndema, said is the one that we're going to focus on. So for all intents and purposes, you are going to focus on the right-hand side, on the right letters. In doing that, I will also refer to the bill, to the relevant clauses in the bill. The bill, the one written B37B, I will refer to the relevant sections that were amended and explained them briefly. Thank you, Chairperson. As my colleagues indicated earlier, that the purpose of the bill is to align it with the various definitions by the Constitutional Court, to align it with the decision of the Constitutional Court. Yes, I will start here with the clauses. We have amended the clause on child pornography. Chairperson, we used to have two definitions of child pornography. Finger Communication Board was saying this is the definition of child pornography, while the definition of sexual offenses and related matters was also defining pornography.
So we've made a cross-reference here to, because it was creating a problem with regard to prosecution when they prosecute. Because they need to look at the definition of either the Sexual Offence Related Act or the one of FPP. So we did this, we cross-made reference to Sexual Offences Related in order to be, so that they can be consistent and uniformity. The Department of Justice and also they supported this view. When we go on the second definition, we have a definition of online and commercial online distributor. We have also towards the end a definition of non-commercial online distributor. A commercial distributor is an online distributor, is a person or distributor in relation to films, games, and publications which are distributed for commercial purposes. When you are not doing it for the purpose of commercial purposes, you are non-distributor. And in this regard, Chairperson, I would like to refer you with members to page 3. Initially indicated on the top of page 3 of the bill, that all references here will be on the bill. That is section B37B. When we go to page 3, we see on top there is a definition of child pornography. We've made references to the Act. And when we see down there, we see the definition of commercial online distributor. Because they are engaged in the business of distributing films and on that. So their classification, their materials need to be classified before they have been distributed. And we also define here distributor, meaning a person who conducts business of distributing films and games, which is the mandate of the FPB to pre-classify this material before they go to the public. So, President, I'll go to slide number 22. This bill, Chairperson, creates an enforcement committee. This enforcement committee is being created having its powers and duties, and I want to refer the committee to page 6. Page 6 of the bill. When you look at page 6 of the bill, you see that there is the 6B down there, the powers and duties of enforcement committee. This enforcement committee that is established is going to investigate all cases referred to the board. For adjudication, it will adjudicate other cases and make appropriate findings, that is the cases, and impose fine and other. That is the enforcement committee. So, President, on page 22 of the presentation, going back to the presentation, there is a new definition of the game. We have included the new definition of the game. Here, what was included here is the word internet. The purpose here is to regulate all the games and films that are distributed online medium on internet or what. Because you have a situation where you have some games which are dangerous, inappropriate for children, pornography, propaganda of war that are done through the internet. Initially, the Act did not have that because of the technological advancement, that the word internet was there, was not there. So we've included that. And when we go to page 23, we have inserted here the new definition of harm. Harm here would mean causing emotional, psychological, or moral distress. And when we go back to the bill, we see in page 3, on top, Chairperson, page 3, we have the definition of a feeling. They are all the feeling, game, and order. Going to slide number 24, we have the definition of hate speech. This is the new definition that was included in order to cover all those kinds of hate speech, propaganda of war that are distributed on the social media and platform. In other words, we should also make it clear that Chairperson, the FPB does not regulate the social media, but if there is that content which is prohibited, which is inappropriate and dangerous or in pain form, FPB will have a jurisdiction over that film or video, working together with SPA, South African Police Services. So I must also indicate, Chairperson, that when we were looking at this definition, I understand it as this HPH bill, and we also consulted the drafters of it to make sure that we also align it with it. In page 25 of the presentation, here we inserted the definition of independent communication. So this is a new definition because it's a regulator. It was included here. And because we also included internet earlier, because all this propaganda, social media are done on internet, we also then defeat to define internet. And we say internet here is defined according to Electronic Communication and Transaction Act. We made also cross-reference to ensure that all the legislation are in harmony, as I indicated earlier with the definition of child pornography. When we go to page 26 of the presentation, Chairperson, as I indicated earlier, we have a definition of non-commercial online distributor. It means a person who distributes content using internet or enables content to be distributed by user online. As opposed to commercial, the commercial is the one that is engaged in the business. And only the content that is distributed by commercial, it is the one that needs to be pre-classified. Because the commercial distributor is engaged in the business, so it needs to be pre-classified. With regard to non-commercial, the FPA is not pre-classifying it. But if there is a complaint regarding such revenge porn or inappropriate material, that's when FPA will intervene. In page 26, again, we have defined, and I mean included, the new definition of online medium. The definition of online medium, that is when this information is disseminated on website, communication or message system, social media, or similar facility which is connected to the publicly available internet. That is slide number 26. When we go to page 27, the presentation, there is a definition of a permit. This definition, the permit would mean that is the permit issued by the board. This is one of the regulatory matters of FPB. This definition was inserted because of the consequences of co-regulatory regime that is introduced. In other words, in terms of the bill, there will be a cooperation, chairperson, between both the South African police services, the internet service providers, and also the FPB. Because if you put a certain content there, you have to bear a responsibility. And if you do not comply, there are also associated costs and penalty. In page 28, the definition of Press Council of South Africa, as we know it, was inserted because it's also a self-regulatory entity. And a definition again in page 28 of the presentation of prohibited content was inserted. And it means any content which amounts to propaganda for war, incitement or imminent violence, advocacy of hatred that is based on an identifiable group. In other words, if you put that content which is harmful to the person, whether it concerns the race, gender, ethnic, disability, sexual orientation or what, it is regarded as a prohibited content in which we will have a jurisdiction over it. Page 29, definition of self-classification, it's a new classification, was included to provide clarity with respect to the co-regulation that I referred earlier. And in page 29, again, there was a new definition of social media. We define here social media to include various online technology tools and forms of electronic communication via internet websites for social networking. I must also emphasize again, Jonathan, that FPB will not be regulating the social media. However, will intervene if there is such posting a video depicting of propaganda, war, sex, or revenge porn. That's when FPB will intervene. In page 30, Chairperson, we have the definition of streaming. Is another way of circulating the content. It means the delivery of films by an online distributor or broadcaster, including the online streaming or downloading. When we go to page 31, I'm down here, Chairperson, with the definitions. Now we are going to the gist of the Act. In page 31, because of the technology which is advanced now, it does become necessary also to amend the object of the Act. The object of the amendment was there, but in order to align it with the modern technological advances, it criminalizes
the position. If you are in a position of pornography, you produce it or you distribute it, that child pornography, it is a criminal offense. I'll also indicate at the end, the Act also criminalizes this, and this criminalizes obviously these offenses and make it the non-compliance of it to be an offense. In slide number 2, slide number 32, on the right-hand side, we have amended this section 4. In section 4, this section that was amended, it says under paragraph A, in consultation with Minister, issuing direction of general application and prison classification guidelines regarding accreditation contemplated in section 18B in accordance with the Act. In other words, this section was revised to empower the council to make also determination regarding the accreditation. When it makes accreditation, whether foreign or international, it also does that in consultation with the minister. In slide number 33, that is the composition of the board. This initially I referred to the enforcement committee, like the enforcement committee that is responsible for investigating this translation in terms of the Act. But here in page 33, under clause 6, that is where it is established and the duties are stated in page 6 of the bill. When we go to page 6 of the bill, it says 6B, under 6B, the enforcement committee will investigate these cases, will adjudicate these cases, cases make appropriate findings, will hear evidence. When we go to page 7, even the agreed person is entitled to appeal before the tribunal. Again, under page 7, there are circumstances in which a member of the enforcement committee will be removed. Like, for instance, on a ground of incapacity, incompetence, and they're all stated in page 7. When we go to slide number 34, because initially the Act was dealing with the members of the tribunal and the members of the council, these were just sections that we included also the enforcement committee, because now they're part and parcel of the films and publications, where we indicate the date for the period for removal and appointment and so forth. In page 35, this is the clause that deals with the accreditation of commercial online distributors, as I indicated earlier. Those are online commercial distributors that are engaged in the business of distributing material. Their content need to be pre-classified by the FPB. And we go to page 36. Again, it also deals with the accreditation online for them. And clause number 10, just in page 6, it also deals with administrative support, general administrative support that will be provided to the enforcement committee. In page 37, we see we have compliance officers here. This is also the new section that will be permitted, this compliance officer will be permitted to enter to any premise with the consent of the person in charge of that premise in which the business of the sale or high exhibition of film is being executed. In other words, if there is an allegation to the effect that there is this pornography within this internet service provider, the compliance officers will be permitted through the consent of the owner to approach that internet service provider. If there is any material which is inappropriate, it will be taken down. Page 38 of the presentation, this is the new section in which the board may, on application and upon payment of the prescribed fee by a commercial online, will approve. This is basically the section which entitles the board to approve that accredited content that will be distributed. And then in page 89, from here, this is one of the critical sections of this bill here in and these are the new ones, because initially there was a gap. If someone, we said, like I said earlier, posted
this prohibited content, you did not have a remedy to remove it. But through this section 18E, you are entitled to lodge a complaint. Because now if someone has posted a video, something concerning you on the media, you do not have the power or jurisdiction to do anything. So section 18E, it says, that is in page 39, any person may complain to the board about unclassified prohibited content, potential prohibited content. In page 14, the critical also provision also continue. This is the main one for prohibition. That is in page 40. Under 18F, this is basically the section that prohibits it when you distribute the private sexual photography. It says no person may expose through any medium, including internet, social media, a private sexual photographer or disclosure of another person without the consent. In other words, it's a criminal offense if you do that. And the offenses and the penalty is indicated at the end, which I'm coming to that. Like, for instance, it will be a 6 months imprisonment or 150,000 fine, or both conviction and fine, which I will indicate later. And again, in terms of 18G, it says no person may create or produce. In other words, you are not allowed now to create or produce or distribute any media, any content on the internet and social media of that film which depicts or reflects sexual violence or any violence against the children, as DG has indicated in the other. It intends to cover one of, it intends to protect the children. When I go to page 41, it's also one of the critical sections, that is 18I. That is, it says 18I, where a film or game has been classified, exempted from by this act, or such film or game has been classified by commercial online, it is a film or game approved for sale or display labeled here. In other words, it says if the film has been classified, that classification or rating should also be included here. And again, when you go to 18J, it provides for pre-classification, requesting less restrictive classification. In page 42, Chairperson, this section was done basically to grant the minister or any person concerned a right also to, if the complaint is made to the minister to refer the complaint to the appeal tribunal to also adjudicate over it. That is in page 42. And when we go to page 43, which is almost the end of the presentation, it refers to the term. Like I said, there are single offenses which are created. If you create it, it's an offense. If you distribute it, it's an offense. If you produce it, it's an offense, and disseminate it, it's an offense. And all these offenses are stated in clause number 27. And I want to refer the chairperson and the committee to page 17. When you look in the page, on the page 17 of the bill, we see down there, under 24, that prohibition of offense penalties, distribution, exhibition, position. You see that if you know, it says any person who knowingly distributes or exhibits in public a film or game without first having been registered with the board shall be guilty of this offense. In other words, if you distribute it, you are a commercial distributor who are engaged in the business and you are not registered with the board, it will be an offense. And upon conviction, you can be liable for a fine not exceeding 150,000 or imprisonment not exceeding 6 months or even both imprisonment and a fine. So the offenses that I referred to earlier under 18, they are all indicated. Each single offense, the penalty is indicated here from page 17 until page 21. So in other words, page 17, when you refer to section 18, you must also cross-reference to section 24. Because section 18, it says it's an offense. In 18, it's an offense, while 24 says the penalty and amount for imprisonment upon conviction here is, you know. So, again, in page 44, the prohibition for these offenses, when you submit a false information regarding to the board, the offense for it is also stated here in page 17 of the bill to page 24. And again, page 45, it continues. So page 46, in page 46, chapter 7, we have clause 40, clause 31. This clause was inserted to make the publication by the minister pursuant to this act to be subject to public participation. In other words, this act did not have a provision that says if you want to amend anything or what, you need to consult public, whether it's done by the minister or whoever. So we made a provision saying that anything that has been done as so far as public is concerned, the classification or what, needs to be published for the purpose of public consultation. And I'm Dan Jefferson and honorable members, and I'll hand over to DG.
Thanks, Chair Nkondo. Thanks, Chair and honorable members. Slide 47 deals with constitutional issues. And the reason why this is very, very important, this slide, is simply because of the historical context around FPP. As many of you are aware, this is an entity that whose existence predates 1994. It was a censorship authority previously. So as we align that, we need to think about those, particularly two elements which are critical to our constitution: freedom of expression and the right to privacy. That's the reason why we say we want to decriminalize the sharing or distribution of adult content by consenting parties or individuals, because I think if it's within their right that they do so, as long as they are not doing so in an offensive manner or they are not offending other people. So that's why we have made that provision. So what we are trying to do, like we said earlier, Chair and Honourable Members, is that this bill has to be compatible with the rights accorded to the citizens of South Africa in accordance with the Constitution and the law. So that's a very, very important statement to make. And if you recall the process that was outlined by the CEO earlier from slide 15 to 16, it kind of chronicles how long it took for us to be where we are. It has been over 3 years. And the unfortunate thing is, as more time goes by, there are a lot of legal acts that are happening or that are occurring on social media platforms or digital platforms. And it's very important that we need to deal with that. And one of the worrying factors is the fact that some of the social media platform owners who are operating in South Africa, they are refusing to register or cooperate with the Film and Publication Board, because they say, or their argument is that there's no legal provision or legal requirement to do so. So they are not in any way legally required. As a result, the reason why I'm talking about registration is because as they register, one of the things that they have to do is to pay a registration fee, which is very important for the upkeep of FPB and ensuring that it carries out this mandate successfully. And they are refusing to do so. And another biggest concern is that even if they are operating here, the mere fact that they are not registered, there's a lot of large capital outflow of the country in advertising revenue, which we have the country, our ailing economies, and a lot of it is being shipped out because they are not operating here, they are not registered here, therefore they don't comply with any law, whether it's tax law of the Republic. And that's why I think it's important that we need to deal with these matters moving forward. So this bill really on 48 provides that legal certainty and provides those kind of enforcement provisions for FPB to deal with these matters, ensure that whoever that operates in those platforms, particularly digital platforms which have been not regulated for a long time, it is compliant with the law to a certain extent. And we therefore feel that it's important that the bill is expedited, because it will help us to deal with those kind of issues. And as the department, we are of the opinion that this bill should be dealt with in accordance with the procedures established by Section 25 of the Constitution, since the provisions are aligned to that. We
In the end, Honorable Chair and members, we want to submit this Film and Publication Board amendment for consideration by this House. We want to thank you for the time allocated to us. Thank you, Chair. Let's appreciate the opportunity, the presentation by the department, to engage in your interest, DM. As a member of this committee, I want to support the framework and the supreme intention of the bill. Precisely because our quest is to build a coherent society with proper moral orientation and cultural focus. Now, I'm worried when you say the providers or the publishers, they refuse to cooperate. It's because they are outsiders. They only came to South Africa to make profit and exploit whatever opportunity and gap that exists in our society to corrupt our society. And the DG, you fell short to say, in this context of non-cooperation, what do you do, what do you aim to do? Because the enforcement committee, I like that concept. I remember, Chair, in one of our debates, we were debating an oversight report about the state of and the functionality of this institution called NCOP. One important concept or idea I front-loaded in that debate was to say, if I had power, I would establish a very serious enforcement committee or structure in South Africa that will cut across all sectors. Because the private sector, GM, it does as or they do as they wish in South Africa. Where have you ever seen a private sector company refusing to cooperate with the government or legislation or the law? And then they've identified a weakness in our workings and our structures that we can't impose ourselves, we can't impose any ruthless measures in South Africa. Yet they are corrupting our society. Now, I want you to elaborate on that. And the second issue, Chair, okay, I want to talk about the capital outflow. You've touched on it, but it's the issue that we need to harness and arrest, if I can put it that way. And as members of this parliament, you know, Chair and honorable members, I normally don't believe and agree to any conventional, maybe the conventional wisdom or conventional practice. I never conform to such. I believe as legislators, if we talk about freedom of expression and we discern that this freedom of expression stipulated in the Constitution is being exploited for sordid and cynical elements in our society, we must have guards to say we need to amend the Constitution of the Republic if freedom of expression is being abused. Oh, sorry, I'm not in a meeting yet. That's my firm and fervent belief. Because elements of the constitutional, of the clauses of the Constitution are being abused in the context of democracy and freedom of expression, freedom of association. Look at the violence that we have in South Africa today. and yet there are no consequences, you know. Now, the issue that I constantly raise, DM, to this department, the violence that appears on our TV screens, I believe Honorable Gwele was part of, was leading this department, isn't it, previously? Yeah, whatever. But it was the relevant issues that talks to communication TV screen. Because in one clause here you say, whatever that will talk about sexual violence and violence against children. But let's take it violence in a broader context of its nature in our society, in our television screen. We need to cap or circumvent that issue. You have power in the DM and the minister. Things must change. You can't just constantly, when I will check, talk about things and you don't circumvent them and impose ruthless measures. Allow me to use that word. Because we love this country and we want progress in South Africa. Look, you talk of Google South Africa. Whether I saw it on the screen, I asked myself, I wonder what was the nature and the content of their submission and articulation. If you go to China, China has banned Google. Because they say Google refused to submit to the laws of the country. Yeah. I know South Africa is southern part of the continent, will want to be the so progressive government, blah, 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 blah. Even people who corrupt our society and they go away with murder. I'm interested to know what are the context, not the deeper content, but the context of Google in this regard. Because our kids, they have cell phones. Our young is one in the cell phone, you can go to the cell phone and go to cook. He even teaches me how to open the phone. Now, if we can arrest DM at that level, this bill is going to be a futility. Because we don't have to go to Google, and he gets corrupted in the mind. Now, the powers and functions of the enforcement committee is very much important. But then I want to give you a task again, in addition to what I've commented on. I know it's a general phenomenon, dear. You say, DG, we want, or not DG, the presenter, legislation to be in harmony is the biggest challenge that we need to deal with. That our pieces of legislation, sometimes they don't talk to each other. It's a big challenge in which legal gurus will have to dissect all pieces of legislation in this land so that they talk to each other and they correspond to each other. Because from my view, there's a lot of duplication and contradiction in our legislation. But that issue is for another level and for another organization. But I'm raising it because we have got legal gurus here. Thank you very much, Chef.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me also appreciate the presentations, but also starting with the parliamentary legal advisor for laying and leveling up some playing ground so that we can at least enter space. My colleagues have touched quite a number of issues that indeed are very, very important. It cuts across the social economic spheres. Perhaps one should just also start with the social one. I was nearly in trouble because of this scam. At some point, an anonymous, we have got this group WhatsApp, where a very foreign, very strange was disseminated throughout all those that I've been related to. I used to work at Standard Bank as a group. We've got the parliamentary, the honorable members. It went there. That's the pornography. But that was terrible. Yeah. He's laughing because I was... So, the committee that will be established. I'm interested in the capacity. Because in other departments, in other areas, we will be having a committee. But taking the proliferations of these information throughout and the scale, as you have also said, I was a little bit skeptical of the capacity of the committee. But as you proceed, you did mention administrative support, which I think it will enhance the personal capacity. But if you can touch it a little bit so that when I say, indeed, I support this bill, but I must rest assured that the impact, meaningful impact, but also go to the economic sphere, where there is this illicit outflow of funds, cash, that cripples the economy of our country. Whether you go to mining, the tax evasion is always there. Can the committee also have the capacity to be able to address this very, very critical thing? Because this, for me, this bill could have long been out of our hands and been implemented. I think that's also the last thing that I had. Collaborations, of course, with other entities. In the ensuring that there will be, of course, the ratio that conscientizes the broader society from time to time, of the importance of this piece. Now let me pause. Maybe I'll have a second bite. Of course, a lot has been touched by this honorable member. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. I am aware that we will go into the bill clause by clause at the next opportunity after we had our public hearings and stuff. So I will not go into the bill itself. Just some clarity seeking questions, PG, through you, Chairperson. The first thing, you mentioned on page 15, there were some inadequacies regarding the consultation process the 19th of April 2016. Can you just elaborate on what were those inadequacies? Because I just want to try and link it up with this one. So, because when you do something there, in the NA, you know, it should be setting an example for us not to do the same thing or do likewise, you know, if it was legal or so. Can you just tell us, because we're sitting with a sort of conundrum now and a decision that we have to make. So if you can just fill us in on that one. And then the last one, Chairperson, the state law advises in this department, it's of opinion that this bill should be dealt with in accordance to the procedures for Section 75 of the Constitution. I'm just a bit worried. Can you elaborate on that? Why do you say that? Can you give us an opinion on why you take Section 75? Because in my opinion, communications do have a provincial arm. If you look at NDDA and all that, if you look at regulatory issues of community radio stations and so forth, it's done provincially. And I just think that provinces might also have an input on this bill. So can we just get clarity on why the decision was made, and if so, are you saying that provinces do not have a role to play, and you take me that as Section 75 of the Constitution and not Section 76? Thank you, Chair.
All of that is a common thing from what I wanted to ask, but your page 37, Section 15, Clause 14, the compliance officers are permitted to enter any premises with the consent of the person in charge. Now, what happens if I don't give your consent? And on one side, you've got information, there's child pornography, so there. What next you'll do, you go to the judge. By the time you move to the judge, I've already removed all the material. So your compliance officers simply don't have any teeth to bite. They don't have any. Thank you.
Jim, and your entourage, there's an issue that I forgot to raise. Your qualification for one to be part of the enforcement committee. You are saying one must have law, must be a retired judge, retired magistrate. You know, I'm not a scientist, but I believe in science. And everything you do, we always say, you will learn, or let me put it this way, the theory of knowledge. Those who are left as my tool, as I can say, the theory of knowledge. You can't require 10 years of experience for anybody to serve in this community. When you have young black graduates in South Africa who are unemployed, who cannot be hired by any white, well-established firm. Because it's a fact that not all of those black graduates can be absorbed in the state. But then when we have this kind of structure that begins to advance and protect and enforce our laws in different sectors, you understand what I'm saying. You can say 4 year experience or even 3 years experience, because in that process this young black graduate will understand what does it mean to interpret the law in South Africa. You don't interpret the law theoretically only, because you are a student and a graduate, but interpret the law via practice. I'm talking about the science now, the theory of knowledge. Because it is in that process of implementing the law where you will learn more about the interpretation and the application of the law. Now, I'm saying in Congress, I really have a challenge and a problem with a 10-year experience. We need to change that. And I want to say even 3-year experience is too much. Because the public sector cannot behave like a private sector. Our kids are graduates, they are unemployed because they are told that they don't have necessary experience. Thank you, Chair.
I wanted to deal with the broad issues here, and then the DG and the technocrats will deal with some of these specific issues. And maybe let me take what the Honorable Fakis is saying. And it's an issue that as the NCOP, you should also, as you engage with the bill, and look at, especially on the requirements, so that you are also extensively able to deal with some of the things, especially on the requirements of who should save and other related things. And I want to submit to you, Chair, that having served in this committee, in the department, especially the entity itself, as I'm responsible for it, there are serious lessons that one is learning. I mean, there's a conference that I attended, in the Hope Conference, where they were looking broadly on the kind of content that comes online from various countries into South Africa. And that in hope is even able to link with Interpol to even trace back where that information comes from and then deal with the countries accordingly. Now, looking at the current situation in South Africa and the fact that we live in the Internet of Things, but there's also the fourth industrial revolution that speaks more about technological advancement, you'll also need young legal minds that are they have some of the things that they can deal with over and above the technology that FPB will also want, because it's not only warm bodies that FPB will want, but they'll also need advanced technology to be able to take some of the things and deal with them. So I agree in a way with Honorable Fakisi that some of the requirements that you are putting, we're not saying putting more experience, we are undermining other people, but also we should accommodate young and upcoming people to also participate in these opportunities and be able to add value to government. But just also to say, Honorable Fakis, you see, one of the things, and honorable members, through you, Chair, one of the things that we're trying to tighten, especially when the COO was speaking on some of these things, you will realize that government, especially, let me take the Department of Education as an example, the smart classroom approach that we are going to, the smartphones, the smart TVs, and all other things. We have to, in as much as those things are now starting to be introduced to schools, good idea, good element of making sure that we improve the performance of children, but there are unintended consequences that come to that. Because, and this is what FPD wants to do. Central to that is to protect
harmful content that should not reach the child. And that's what we want to do, as we did with the school. And at least through this guidance, there are areas where you are unable to be able to get that content. There are schools already that are using different and other things, but they did allow some of these things to come through. So they're not using textbooks, they're getting those smart textbooks through whatever, but they can also access some of those things. But FPB is there to say, in case this happens, then we are able to deal with some of those things. So I think those are some of the things that we really want to do. So the intention is noble of going smart, but there are unintended consequences. So it is also between us as a department and yourselves as members of the select committee to start to campaign for digital literacy. It's important because we're now leaving our people behind, and people, parents in the school governing bodies and all those things, now have to be alive to some of these things. Don't take it for granted that when your child is sitting somewhere, she's going through an internet and doing correct material. She may be consuming other things. So it's a call we're making as a department that we are going to embark on digital literacy, but the committee also must start to do that in their constitution. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much for the questions, honourable members. On the last one that was posed by honourable member Patrici, I think that's a very important issue that we need to consider it. And I think, especially within the context of high unemployed graduates, who some of them are interns, I think these are the opportunities, and we will indeed, through the guidance of this committee, consider that submission. And let me deal with two, and then I will pass others to my colleagues. The first one that I want to deal with is around the level of violence on our screens. I think you are correct, the Honourable Bakisi. This is a concern. That's why for us, we, as the department, we are going to review our entire broadcasting policy that was done in 1989. And one of the issues that we want to deal with is precisely that, around the full effects question, because I think you are right, to an extent in South Africa, we think that there's no limitation regarding this. I happen to be in the US for some time, and one of the things that amazed me is for a CD or a movie, we are likely to have two versions. On that version, there's one for adults and there's one for young people. I'll give it as a bit. I don't know how many of you know the movie called Basic Instinct. But even the good, the bad, and the ugly, it's an old movie. Even now, when you go there, even for every song, depending on the nature of the lyrics, you are likely to have two versions. And I think we need to tighten our regulatory environment to deal with matters like this. And I think that will help. Then on the review of the policy, one of the things that we are looking at is the scope or the regulatory mandate by ICASA, because that's is what we think they are doing. So that there should be this alignment between what they are doing and what FPB is doing. We can't have a situation whereby ICASA says that on the digital screens or digital platforms, they put what they call, I think they regulate content in terms of the time channels. They will tell you that in a particular time, 9 to 12, then adult content will be shown. But how many of the families in South Africa have parents to guard their children? I think I, for one, sleep at 10, and my kids can stay up until 2 watching TV. And then how many of them understand this kind of things? I think it's very, very key that we deal with that. And that we are, in our process, we are going to try to make sure that there's alignment and provide measures to deal with this. I think there are interesting lessons to be learned out from that, and we'll deal with that. And then on the enforcement committee, my colleague, Advocate Nebondwe from FEP Council, will deal with that. But for me, my simplest answer would be the second point, that registration fee that is so critical should be used towards the capacitation of this enforcement committee. Because if they pay, that money should be used for that. Whether it's the penalties, whether it's the fines, I think the commission showed us how to improve the capacity of your regulator. Every fine that they impose on a particular transgressor, they take that money towards the development and build capacity in that industry. We have seen what happened with the media cartels. What they did, they took the money to the MDDA so that MDDA can train people in advertising. So I think maybe that's the model that we can draw from so that we can capacitate. Now, I think you are very right. Unless we capacitate this enforcement, it will just be a name and nothing more. Yes, and that's why I think this needs more capacity. But allow me to give the advocate in the board to deal with the issue of capacity, and then the CEO will deal with the on the cases of non-compliance of the operators, some of the examples that they have. And then the state law advisor, Mr. Advocate Pesa, will deal with the question around the classification of the bill as Section 75. Then other things to do with others around awareness, how to be sure that maybe the members of the public are made aware of this. Thanks.
Thank you, the DG, and also the Deputy Minister, and honorable members. Good afternoon. I'll answer the question on two questions on the enforcement committee. I'll first start with the one with the capacity of the enforcement committee. I think the question around capacity of the enforcement committee relates to the fact that whether this enforcement committee going to have chiefs to buy? Are they going to be able to ensure that they comply with the Bills and Application for the Act? So if you look into the bill, we have raised the bar when it comes to the composition of the enforcement committee. We are saying that this committee must consist of four members. To 5 members, and those members, one must be a judge or a retired judge of the High Court of South Africa. Secondly, the other one must either be an advocate or an attorney with a track record of 10 years appropriate experience in practice. Thirdly, a magistrate or a retired magistrate with at least 10 years. Fourthly, a professor of law or a lecturer of law, either retired or an active lecturer or a professor, with at least 10 years experience. The reason why we have put those applications in experience, we want this enforcement committee to comprise of people of high and people who know what they are doing. And people will be able, because we are in a challenge with distribution, especially for a distributor. We had a challenge with the other distributors who intentionally they try.
I suggest that advocate, right? You leave that for it. Because you can't overhaul the deputy minister. She spoke and expressed a view on that on the basis of my submission. I don't repudiate the judge or retired judge and retired magistrate. But you can't be having these retired judges leading every process, having a salary on both sides when you have young kids who are unemployed in South Africa. Now leave that point because we can't overhaul the deputy minister.
Thank you, honourable member. And maybe in essence also there are certain qualifications where we also require law, rules, experience in law, qualification in law, law enforcement, regulatory matters, who have knowledge of feelings, games, application, arts,
studied statistical technology and also sentencing. And again, also, we also want people who are victim programs and who are not qualified to act on the basis that they want to be there. Coming back to the question of the honourable member, with regards to the recent graduates, young graduates, why they cannot be a member of the university, we also have an opportunity also, or the entitled to be given an opportunity also to serve in this community. We have benchmarked with other regulatory committee or enforcement committee in other industries. And the research has shown that the committee of this nature require highly experienced people. And the recent graduate would be good to be on the administration part of it. Because if you look at the administration of the enforcement committee itself will be done by the Institute of Commission Court. Then we will need the people who in the administration there. So maybe it will be more appropriate for the young graduates also to absorb them so that they can get experience graduates and graduates who have been in the community and who have participation in the community and also participation.
Maybe, Chair, I thought Advocate understood what the request of the committee is. That let's take the broad framework that says the NCOP can broadly look at some of the requirements that have been put, and then looking at the current situation in the trend, and the fact that we are now in the fourth industrial revolution, we're not undermining experience and all other things. There's wisdom there, but there's also technological aspects. The mixture of some of these things has to be looked at. So let's leave it to the committee to also come back and give us today, because this is what we have put for the NCOP. So let's not defend it. We'll come back and get feedback and then be able to deal with some of those things. I think I'm appealing to everybody who's going to respond, because we can't come and then do consultation and want to justify other things. Can we take it in that way?
Thank you, members, for the questions. I'll answer the first question that was asked by the honourable member on how do we deal with non-compliance of particularly online distributors in the market. One of the reasons why the amendments were necessary is that as an administrative regulatory body, the FTB has limited or no power to take administrative action against non-compliance by any distributor. Right now, as things currently stand, as a distributor, if you are not complying with the provisions of our Act, we have a responsibility to take you to law enforcement. So we cannot institute an administrative action, as is usually the case with most regulatory bodies, where you have a hearing and you give a penalty to the non-compliant distributor. So one of the key reasons why we thought the amendment was necessary was so that we can have that administrative power. And also the fines. If you look at distributors who have been convicted for contravening our Act, it would be a 1,500 fine, and that is really nothing to a distributor. So The whole point is to create that regulatory framework where we are empowered to take administrative action. And secondly, it also outlines the obligations of yourself now as a distributor to ensure that you have the necessary safeguards when it comes to prohibited content. And remember, prohibited content is not what we call harmful content where you have age advisors. Prohibited content is what is not permitted for distribution in terms of our constitution and in terms of provisions of our act. So that's one of the most important elements to the bill. The issue about compliance monitors, it links to my previous answer as well about the way we are empowered. The initial clause we had put in the initial bill was saying that we should be able to enter. But that is one of the clauses that was found to be inconsistent with legislation that governs privacy. So that's why you still have that proviso where that if you are not willing to, we can then do it with the police officers or law enforcement. The question of the what inputs were made by some of the distributors, I don't think I want to go into that, but a lot of the issues that were raised, we had responded to them. It was about definitions and about overreach in terms of our legislation. And I think the Deputy Minister has already highlighted that this bill will not succeed without an empowered population in terms of digital literacy and digital communication. So over and above the provisions of the legislation, the Formal Publication Board as well, in terms of our strategy and how we use the resources from industry. We are focusing a lot on public education, focusing on learners, focusing on educators and parents, on how to be empowered digital citizens. So over and above what is contained in the legislation, there is that element of consumer education and protection that is provided for in the legislation that we are executing as the FPB as well. Thank you very much.
Just two questions, I think one from Honorable Julius around the inadequacy of the consultation session, which if we can deal with that one. And then the one on scissors and warrants, getting permission from the person that is to be searched that we can.
Thank you, Jefferson. Just to expand on the issue, it is true that the Honourable Member, the delay in obtaining the consent for that warrant can delay, if not obstructing the purpose of that search, because it might be imminent that you need to enter into that premise as soon as possible. So, in fact, at the time, when we included this, we looked at this matter and we noted that the due process of the law automatically applies here. That's why when we look at page 10 of the bill here, page 10 of the bill under paragraph 4, here it says, in order to give to the object of this act and fulfillment of this in consultation concurrence with the Minister of Police, they must deploy a member of South African Police Service within the board to carry out this compliance. So if the police officer is present, there, because in terms of SAPS, he has the power to enter there. Automatically without the consent, he's the one who can proceed to do that. Otherwise, in terms of the Act, when we look in page 9, it says either the member of the board can go alone or with assistance of South African police officer. That is under 1A in page 9 of the bill. It says either with assistance of the SAPS or alone. So I would guess that in those instances, an assistance of police officer, it would be needed. Where you feel that the delay in obtaining that illegal material will perhaps destroy or the purpose of such search. Thank you, Honourable Member.
Thank you. Chair, just the last question on slide 15, the one that talks to the adequacy of consultation. I think Parliament would be best placed to give us the reason for what exactly transpired. From our understanding, it was a parliamentary process where an expert calling for submissions was issued on the 7th of April, and after it was issued, there was a call from members of the public for the extension of that period for public consultation. But the exact considerations in terms of what informed the change, the committee, the National Assembly Committee or the committee section, would be best placed to provide the reasons.
The last one, Chair, on why is it a 75 million?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the issue of classification of the bill is a very important issue, because the bill may be declared to be unconstitutional based on the procedure that was followed by Parliament in passing the bill. So it is an important issue. Chair, guidance can be heard here, Chair, from the Constitution itself that can guide how a bill should be proceeded with by Parliament. Schedule 4, Chair, of the Constitution lists the functional areas of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence. Meaning, Chair, the list that is contained in Schedule 4 are areas in which, in terms of which the national parliament can legislate, and also the provincial parliaments or legislatures can legislate, Chair. Chair, if Section 76 of the Constitution states that you can only follow the Section 76 procedure if the bill deals with an area listed in Schedule 4. Also, Section 44 of the Constitution also reiterates that position, Chair, that if there's an issue under Schedule 4 of the Constitution, then that bill must be dealt with in terms of Section 76. Now, Chair, if you look close at the list contained in Schedule 4, Chair, and the provisions of the bill itself, the bill aims to regulate classification of buildings and games and prevention of exposure of children to child pornography and international bodies to be regulated when they want to distribute buildings and games in the country. Chair, those issues are not really listed in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. Failing which, Section 44 says that if they're not listed there, then it should be dealt with in terms of in terms of Section 75, Chair. The most important thing, Chair, is that there is a judgment, Chair, a Tongwane judgment, that laid to rest any dispute around this issue. It stated that a matter must be dealt with in terms of Section 76 if that matter, in substantial measure, is listed in Schedule 4. Meaning, Chair, if in the bill, Chair, there is an area that is corresponding to an area listed in Schedule 4, and it is dealt with in the bill in substantial measure, then, Chair, that bill must be dealt with in terms of Section 76. Therefore, Chair, in my view, Chair, the bill does not deal with an issue that is dealt with in substantial measure in Schedule 4 to the Constitution. In my view, Chair, this bill has been correctly checked as a Section 75 instead of a Section 76. Yes, Chair, implementation of the bill cuts across provinces, Chair. People are physically throughout all the provinces, but that is not the point, Chair, of the classification, Chair. Schedule 4, Chair, is the functional area of concurrent national and provincial legislative competence, meaning that the provinces may also legislate on such an issue, as well as the national parliament may legislate on such an issue. Therefore, in my view, I concur with the view that the bill is correctly tagged as the Section 25, as the joint taking mechanism of parliament articulated. Thank you, Chair.
On the support and clarity on the issue of taking. In addition to what Advocate Petra has said, Chairperson, I think we need to take it further and say, in fact, after Tongwane, because Tongwane sought to give us direction and a proper interpretation of the provisions that relate to this. It also gave us as people that advise and look into how this is done a good context. But the court in the matter DA against Parliament, which was talking to knock on effect, it even took it further, because tagging and classification is not an easy exercise. Like Advocate Kweta has indicated, there is a lot that goes into finding out where exactly a bill should fall and what process the bill what process in Parliament the bill should take. And in terms of that judgment, which looked into the knock-on effect, it further took the distinction that the Dongwane judgment had given us to say, if we were to follow the fact that every legislation has a knock-on effect, eventually, Section 75 will never have a space, which means all the bills will be followed in terms of Section 76. Hence, there is now that further step to say, be careful to not classify a bill as a 76, because you are fearing that the knock-on effect will make it a 76. So the distinction that Advocate Kweta has given to say, the court has told us clearly, reading what Section 76 provides, it says, Section 76, a bill must fall there if in substantial measure its provisions are impacting on the provinces. And if we look at the provisions of this specific bill that is before Parliament, that is before the committee today, the provision, not the whole act, we must recall that this is an amendment bill, which means it amends an existing act. The principal act was indeed looking into the issue that speaks and that is found in Schedule 4, and that is consumer protection. If you look at the principal act, the main act, it was about and on consumer protection. But this bill, its purpose and its end result is not necessarily about protecting the consumers. That would be either from the social media or from broadcast material and whatever. It may be a knock-on effect, that there are effects that fall under what consumer protection is all about. But the provisions of this bill are not necessarily above consumer protection. If one may venture an opinion, it's actually on justice, because it speaks to what needs to be done. Furthermore, it also may be ventured on establishing a regulatory board. It provides measures how the enforcement committee must be established and how it needs to be constituted. And if you look at just those two that I've mentioned, they are not functional areas that are listed on 34. Which means it becomes exclusive competency of Parliament. Because if you read the Constitution properly, you then find that there is that rule to say, if it is anything that does not fall on what the schedules are providing, Parliament as the national legislature may still legislate on that. Hence, they have exclusive jurisdiction to the things that are not mentioned. Because at the time of drafting, nobody, we are all human, nobody can think of everything that will happen in the future. Hence, there is always room to cover such vacuums and cover such problems when they arise. And that is where, still today, in line with the decision of the JPM, which is binding and is the only decision that we follow, unless they, the JPM, changes it themselves, we follow that decision. And still today, in line with the decision of the JPM, we are still of the view that this bill has been properly tagged as a Section 75 bill. Having said that, when a bill is a Section 75, it does not diminish the extent of public participation and how it is done. Like I said, it is upon the discretion of the committee to decide how they go about. But I also said that there's Section 65 of the Constitution, which says, for purposes of Section 76 bill, the legislature must put in place the Mandating Procedures Act. And the Mandating Procedures Act, it speaks to how provinces must be involved in ensuring that there are proper mandates that speak to the support of each provincial legislature when there is a national legislation that is being drafted and taken through the legislative making process. So So that being the case, in fact, from practice and how Parliament does things, it does not mean that there is no involvement of the provinces when the matter is a Section 75 bill. It is still involved. They still have the power to influence and be part of the process, because the NCOP, we must recall that, it is a forum that puts forward the interests of all the provinces. Hence, they are structured in the manner that they are structured, which is different from the way that the NA is structured. And hence I said, Parliament without the other house cannot be Parliament. And those two houses, they stand on par and they have equal rights and equal footing. And in the manner that they do their processes, they both have a place in our democratic system and the participatory system that the Constitution is giving as the kind of democracy that we chose. I thank you.
Chairperson, can I just request something? Yes, I'm online this. Chairperson, can I just, you know, the question should always arise in the NCOP because we are not the NA. We're not the committee of the NA. We are here to protect the interests of provinces, and I think it should be a standard that these things are tested whenever bills come, that it's tested. But I can suggest, Chairperson, because I also want to test it for myself. You know, it's one thing to get the legal opinion always, but it's another to also inform yourself for future references. Not that we doubt it, you also want to learn. So can I suggest that we get that in writing, why it was tagged as Section 25, all the reasons, and then because I heard you saying that you are here, you're always here, you are employed by Parliament, can we have this, please, Chairperson, because really for future references and also for other bills that are coming in other committees, you know, we're sitting in 9 committees, each of us, and it's, you know, we're dealing quite a lot with these things, especially at the end now. Chairperson, thank you.
If I may check it with your permission, in terms of the rules of Parliament, the State Law Advisor together with the Parliamentary Legal Service, when a bill has been introduced, there must be a legal opinion that is provided for the JTM to assist them in making the decision. And in terms of the rules of Parliament, those opinions and the decision of the JTM is almost all the time placed on the ACP, and it must be available and provided to the members. So I think in light of the request, there is a standard request I can do to provide those two, or ensure that the tabling, both on the NA, the table, the NA table and the NCOP table, should look into that and ensure that that is presented and given to the committee. However, I will take direction from the committee in terms of whether it is, in light of that, still necessary for me to put in writing what I've said in respect of specifically for the filling and publication amendment. I will wait the direction and action of the committee.
I don't think it's necessary. What the State Law Advisor should do, he might just finish us with the judgment that she was referring to, because what she was articulating, she was articulating the content and the extent in which the judgment went. I don't think it's necessary for her to reduce that into her own writing, a letter to the committee. We want that copy of the judgment to be furnished to all members as a point of reference, even for future bills.
Thank you very much. Thank you in the department for presenting the amendment before the committee. We are going to debate the interact with the department during the next session. We will ask questions and propose maybe amendments. And I wanted to say, but I was part of the
deputy minister for the national. I was part of the process in the study group. But it is a very good piece of information that you provide to deliver to us. Because it is a concern. And there's a lot of things that you can mention of pictures and dinners and they die school and shoes. Because other people is making money. There is no regulation in the way. And we even discuss this penalty because we put little, small amount and we ask for higher penalty at the time. But thank you very much. And it was a very good session, and we look forward to the next session where we will
Chairperson, can I also, there's another matter that we deferred for comedy purposes earlier. I think Honorable Park is also, Honorable Nyambi made a suggestion that we take a decision afterwards. When we excuse the department, the committee quickly sit for 5 minutes and take a decision on the extension or not.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think what they are saying, we are going to thank you very much. We will excuse the department and the legal people. It goes unknown. We can decide on our own. We will excuse you. Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.
kind of group?
I don't think as speakers we can go to that far of checking the dates of the advert, blah, 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 blah. We can just instruct the administrators to verify those dates and give them to you as a chairperson, and it should just be a communication. But now, I understand that we're supposed to engage another phase of submissions by different stakeholders. But then another issue linked to that is verify that all stakeholders relevant to this bill or primary stakeholders have been invited for that. Now we can ask an extension so that we cover our back and we don't put unnecessary pressures on ourselves. Now I propose that somewhere in September we can have those so submissions. We have a full day meeting or half a day meeting where relevant and primary stakeholders shall be given an opportunity to make their submissions to the committee on this bill. That's my submission.
Chairperson?
Can I further support of that? I think it's very, very good. The 1st of September will be our next committee meeting since we're going to East Free State. Coming back, the 5th will be, then we can have the deliberations on the written submissions. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I hope that Honorable Parkes will assist. Because what Honorable Chulab is saying will be from Free State, isn't it? And then we'll be sitting. So I think during that week, that Wednesday of our committee meeting, we can utilize that. But I doubt if it will take the whole day. It can't be. It is the same, but it can't take the whole day, you know, which maybe we need to say 9 o'clock and 9 until 39. Yes, I understand, but if we've got a sitting honorable chair, it will be a problem. Yeah, but what we need to avoid in those deliberations is reputations. That's the main thing that we need to avoid. Thank you.
That was my shirt, then the shirt to wish on. Yeah, I think it was last week. Yeah, so I'm going to forget that was my first one. So I'm going to show you Baba's like Okay, I like the discussion. It's just that you're for the president. I feel that you're the president.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I think I'll get better as time goes by. It wasn't as bad as I expected, the one. Frango, isn't it?